Good afternoon, and it's wonderful to see you all here on the second day of the summit. My name is Alexandra Rupp, as Brianna introduced me. I am an account executive at TSMA Consulting, and I'd like to start by introducing everyone today. So right now we have Greg Martin. He is an actor, digital influencer, and a content creator for the biggest names in social media. He has worked with the likes of Lele Pons, Amanda Cerny, and he has also worked with Cedric the Entertainer, Gronk, and many others. Ryan is an actor, and he is the founder of TSMA Consulting, which is a nationally recognized social media consulting and management company. He has taught thousands of entertainers around the country and how to go about working on social media accounts and brand partnerships, and he is himself done over 35 brand partnerships around the world. And now we have Shane Griffin, who is a commercial representative from SAG-AFTRA. She has a lot of experience dealing regularly with social media and digital media and the future of commercial platforms with SAG-AFTRA. So it's wonderful to have you all here today. And I just wanted to take this moment to explain that, unfortunately, Caitlin B. was not able to join us today. She is having health issues with her dog, but we wish her all the best. And we're looking forward to continuing this. So I'd like to start with Greg. Could you tell us a little bit, I love hearing this story all the time, could you tell us a little bit about how you started in content creation when you got to LA and how all of this transpired?
Yeah, so I'm actually from LA, but I ended up moving to a building in Hollywood called 1600 Vine, and basically Vine pretty much started there. There's a lot of really big names that were on Vine that are now big influencers that all live there, and I ended up just moving to this building just because I thought it was a cool building. And I didn't know that all this content creation was going on. So after basically, I have an acting background, and I basically went up to all these big influencers, and I was like, "Oh, you guys, like this is cool what you're doing. Like we should collab sometime." And I just got rejection after rejection because all they really could look at was how many followers you have and like what you're gonna do for them. Finally, after a lot of rejections, I was persistent, kept getting rejected. I was like, I'm just going to start shooting my own content. So I kind of analyzed like the kind of stuff they were doing, what was working for their audience, and then I tried to basically just do it myself. So I started writing, shooting, editing, just doing the whole package myself, and now I've been doing short comedy videos, primarily on Instagram, and I started doing that basically about a year and a half ago. And after all the big influencers started seeing that I was making my own content, they basically said, well, yeah, we want Greg in our videos. So then I started working with a lot of the top people. And whether it was like writing for them or being in their videos, them being in my videos. So I got to that true collaboration place.
Fantastic. And can you explain with us a little bit about your experience so far in the digital marketing sphere? Who have you worked with? And just
so what it's been like. When you put out your own content, which I mean also applies to brands, weird things can happen like indirectly. Like I ended up doing a video with the actor Cedric the Entertainer, Gronk, like Gronkowski, the football player. Ended up doing a video with him just because he liked my content. I've done some brand deals. I got mentioned in the New York Times. Yesterday I was interviewed by NBC Primetime. They're doing a story about social media and basically my building and how it kind of incubated a lot of different content creators. So I guess applying that to brands is, I mean, you guys all have teams in a sense that wherever you're working, and you can kind of just like come up with ideas, just try to, you know, come up with ideas off the top of your head. And I feel that if you continue to write, like a good brand message will come out there. And I know there's, you know, if you're doing a bigger brand video, I think that obviously there's a lot more hoops. You need to make sure your message is really on point versus like social content, versus like my type of content where it's just more funny type videos. But I think it's more about just like, you know, finding a crew of people that all like to create something together and coming together and just trying to create. And you'll get better over time.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And Ryan, would you mind telling us a little bit about TSMA? How did you get the idea for TSMA? How did all of that come about?
Yeah, so I also am from Los Angeles. I moved there about 7 years ago and started working in casting right when I got to town. So I was helping cast films like Coco, which just came out, Narcos, Mistresses, a lot of different series and projects like that. And what I started noticing in the entertainment sphere was that they were looking more and more at social media followings, not only as a way to prove marketability, but also for relatability and to give credibility to the people coming into the room, because they may only have 45 seconds to read for a co-star audition, a couple of lines on a show. That doesn't give them everything they need to know if they want to be on set with that person for maybe 2-3 weeks in Toronto. So I recognized that this was becoming more and more important, and actually a lot of content creators are also actors, or actors are becoming content creators. So there's a lot of blur over in those areas. And so I've created TSMA with the mindset that this crossover, a lot of entertainers don't understand how to utilize their own influence on a digital platform and how to work with companies and work with brands that they're already interested in and already representing on their social platforms without any kind of collaboration or financial transaction. How to turn that into a lucrative career or a diversified part of their revenue. So working with a lot of actors, everything from setting up social media accounts for the first time or teaching, you know, little things about Facebook or how to sync those two platforms, Instagram and Facebook, all the way to large influencers like those that Greg have worked with, as well as actors that are traditional celebrities with large followings that now want to utilize their digital following as well and start to diversify because of the changes happening in the commercial landscape and the shift from traditional to digital. So that is what started all of this, and then through that started teaching at SAG-AFTRA, as well as a lot of different markets all over the nation and also overseas in Thailand and Malaysia and Singapore. There's global implications to everything that we're working on social media-wise. And I started to recognize that and think of ways to incorporate a global perspective into working with these entertainers as well, since many of them have global audiences.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's very important to note for later on. And now, Shane, you spoke a bit about SAG-AFTRA. Would you tell us a little bit about how SAG-AFTRA is moving forward with digital marketing and what you guys are up to over there?
Yeah, so I'm going to back up a little bit and mm-hmm. explain that SAG-AFTRA is the largest entertainment union in the world. We represent 160,000 of the most talented professional performers. We have the SAG Awards, so many people know us through that medium. And what we've seen is, you know, a transition in the commercial place from broadcast, traditional broadcast, to digital marketing, and a lot of the influencers are also actors. So there is a natural crossover, and you know what we do is we represent the best interests of these talent. And not only that, but we want everyone in the ecosystem to thrive. So we're working in partnership with ad agencies and advertisers to make sure everyone wins together. So we're not adversarial, and in that light, one thing that we've done to make it easier to work with our talent in this new digital space, so you don't have to pay broadcast rates, is we rolled out the low-budget digital waiver so that companies that are producing for under $50,000 can then access the best talent in the nation for your digital media. So we're really excited about that, and I can explain more later.
Wonderful. Thank you. And going back to Ryan for a second, how does the work with TSMA work or correlate with what's going on in SAG-AFTRA right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's really important, the low-budget digital waiver and everything shifting and SAG-AFTRA being at the helm of that, because protecting professional performers, everyone you guys have ever seen on television or film is SAG-AFTRA. And for that reason, with all of them now transitioning to digital more so, and the traditional PR routes that, you know, you used to do a 50-state possible, you know, PR release of a film, or there would be a very large traditional billboard push or traditional campaign through commercial space, now is trending towards digital media and social media. So with this new media landscape, many actors are now needing that transitional, they're in that transitional time, and then working with SAG-AFTRA to be able to still be protected, still have scales, still have minimums, and also comfortability if they're shooting something on set, for example, for a digital campaign, and then understanding how to utilize that for themselves. So as a traditional actor booking a commercial or a film or a television show, as you're just starting out, that can really propel your career and help you move forward. In the digital space, if you have no retention on your page, let's say you don't even have a foundation for Instagram, for example, and there's a giant campaign running on Coca-Cola and they're using your face everywhere digitally, and they paid you nothing or trade in many cases for that social media campaign, it not only doesn't help your career, but you also can't financially benefit or create a standard of life as an entertainer. So that's something that we work with SAG-AFTRA with, in the sense that educating its members on how to create a retention from these projects on social media to leverage that for future benefits.
Fantastic. And what you're talking about with commercials going digital right now, I'd like to bring it back over to Shane and see if you could tell us a bit about the Corey and that whole initiative going on.
Yeah, so the low-budget digital waiver was in response to the union's effort to grow and recapture union commercial work. And so we're really committed to working with our talent, but also our partners in the industry, to make sure everyone thrives again. Mm-hmm. So part of my job is to go out, meet with talent agents, casting directors, talent, people who are eligible, anyone who has a vested interest in this ecosystem on how to move forward in this new space, because what we're seeing is just so much content is being needed at an exponential rate, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just hard to keep up. So we're really committed to making sure everyone is safe in this process, but that we're not also a roadblock to this process, right? So any input and suggestions are more than happy to be received. So
going off of that, going off of that, with the different initiatives, including the Corey, I know that recently with the FTC, there's been movement to regulate somewhat how advertisements are going out on social media, such as Instagram. And can you talk a little bit about, seem very excited about that.
Yeah, so the FTC, they put out a guideline, a 17-page guideline with the best practices for how a content creator should disclose their partnership with a brand. And they actually sent out a bunch of warning letters to high-profile content creators and brands and reached settlement agreements with the brands themselves. But in doing more research and talking to the FTC, it became very clear that there's a monetary threat if these disclosures aren't properly addressed. And so basically what was told to me was that they could actually pursue $40,000 per day per violation if they were to go through the process. And if they were to go through everyone's violations, they could collect $400 billion. That's insane. And because we are an institution that wants to protect the best interests of our talent, we decided to become a resource for the FTC guidelines. So we actually condensed a 17-page legalese document that no one's going to read unless you're a lawyer, right, into a one page for our talent. And it's very digestible, palatable. And we actually hosted an event 2 weeks ago where the FTC flew in, and we had CEOs of an MCN, a digital media company, and our national executive director, and then a media company, and to talk about what this new platform is and why it's so important to disclose. And the actual drawback sometimes from disclosing, but how everyone needs to be protected, and that the advertisers need to not put the onus on the creator also, because they could be liable. So that's where we really want to make sure everyone is empowered with the tools and knowledge so that no one gets hurt.
Absolutely. And speaking of tools and knowledge, Greg, you toe the line somewhat. I mean, because you are a SAG-AFTRA actor and you also are heavily involved in digital content creation. What has been your experience in general just working and speaking with different influencers like Lele Pons and Amanda Cerny? Where do people see the future of digital content creation going? What have been some changes going on recently?
So as far as dealing with the bigger influencers, I mean, if you don't know them directly or don't have a direct contact, you usually have to go through a lot of hoops, through a manager or an agent or something. And what I've seen in that realm, I mean, it's been kind of recently, but a lot of people are now going live a lot more often and doing, like, vlogs or kind of daily, you know, just more stories, more vlogging, much more like daily interaction with their fans. Really having like a voice, you know, just like a active voice. They're posting a couple times a day as far as either going live or doing Instagram stories or, and basically from that, then, you know, the brands are pushing through whatever products they want when they do the brand deals. And because they already have that connection, it seems that in some cases, people will buy more. And if the brand doesn't connect with whatever the influencer's audience is expecting out of them, or the influencer doesn't connect with the brand, then it won't be authentic. And you probably won't see a lot of conversions from that.
Okay. And speaking to that, it seems that lately there have, it's come into awareness that there have been some cutting of corners, and it's just, it's a new landscape, so there are obviously gray areas that we need to deal with. What are some things that you would like to see brands take into account when they're approaching influencers for campaigns and just launching those projects?
Yeah, I love that question, because I think that, you know, you definitely want to find the right fit, right, between brand and influencer, and by all means, go for it. But also remember that when you're working with a content creator, this is their livelihoods, right? And so treating them with respect and integrity and paying them what they're worth is really important. And when you work through a union actor, you know, you're actually contributing a small percentage to their retirement and their health insurance. Mm-hmm. And that means a lot, and they appreciate that, because this is their livelihoods. They're not doing this for fun. They spend hours creating this content for you, right? And even if you're paying them $10,000, you're also making out like bandits, because you're not having to hire an ad agency or a PR, right? So keep that in mind. Like, we're all humans and we're all a community and we have to take care of each other. So I would love to see people just like treat each other and do less product trades, you know, and actually like recognize people have to eat and make rent. So if we could just, you know, come together on that.
I think it's a business on both ends of the spectrum, mm-hmm. is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I'd like to ask Ryan a bit about how he, microphones everywhere, how, speaking of product trades, I remember reading in the blog post that was recently published on the SMSS website, where does the line go? I mean, how do you approach when you're approaching brands or brands are approaching you, how do you begin determining what you're worth, what other influencers are worth, in regards to just starting that project and what it takes to put everything together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a tough industry right now for entertainers, absolutely. Even union in the top of their game, everything is shifting. And it's been shifting for a while, as we know, but it's so aggressively shifting now that there's so much less money in the commercial sphere that used to sustain people's lives, that there's commercial actors, like I just spoke recently at Union Working, which is a group of some of the most established commercial actors in the world, and they come together to talk about what SAG-AFTRA is doing, what they can do to help, and there's, I mean, their turnout, they've been telling me, has been going up and up and up, and they're getting bigger and bigger rooms because more and more people are starting to realize, wait a minute, I'm invested in the union, I'm invested in the pension plan, but I'm not booking commercials anymore because all of this spending is transitioning and being spent now, of course, in the digital space. Mm-hmm. And with those that have been working in commercials for years and they don't know how to establish a social media presence that could be worth something to, obviously, like reach-wise to a brand, their likeness is no longer worth as much as it used to be as a commercial performer and using that talent. So I think as far as the question, valuing yourself. Brand trades is something, or like product trade is something that I noticed a ton when I first started. So as a micro influencer traveling around Thailand or whatever I was doing in the travel world, I noticed almost every single time I would reach out to a brand or start to get a negotiation going, and now granted I was doing my own contracts and my own negotiations, everything on my own end, which is now I'm seeing more and more rare, and also something that I try to educate content creators on doing themselves, because unless you have a contract under SAG-AFTRA, which is obviously preferred, or which print is not under that jurisdiction, so that's what I'm talking about, or you have an agency or a representative helping you negotiate those contracts, in a lot of senses, I mean, those reps are not as interested if there's a product that you love yourself and you would be willing possibly to do trade for. For example, I did an excursion in Thailand where we did this amazing yachting adventure, this whole thing, and nothing I would have ever spent my own money on, or our group wouldn't have, in exchange for, you know, helping them with their social media and also posting and getting them some more reach on their pages. But that, like Shane was saying, that doesn't pay the bills. And so with the actors and entertainers, dancers and models and whatever it is that are now becoming more so content creators as well to make a living, the way that they can figure out their pricing and also come to the table with something, in my mind, has always been how much time and energy and effort does it take you to create the content? So as content creators, I think I said in the blog post, I always feel like I'm a part of like a mobile film crew, because I constantly have my like backpack and we have our drone and our my Nikon D750 and my lighting setup, and even if we're traveling, whatever it is, we have huge bags with us because we take this very seriously as far as content creation, not only for the brands that we're working with, but also because we respect and love our following. And those are people that I personally have made connections with. I feel like I have 10,000 pen pals now, you know, in my Trek messages, and I try to respond to every single person who writes me, and I see them as like very important parts of my life and my brand now. And so when I'm thinking about partnering with a company, I'm always considering how will they perceive this, and of course through the FTC guidelines, but also through just the eyes of the consumer looking at my page, of the people I see as friends, as a huge community of thousands, tens of thousands of friends. How are they going to perceive my brand partnership with XYZ? And then after considering all of that, I can come up with a relatively good price. If it's something that I'm thinking, well, this is going to really help my brand, it's something I believe in, a product I believe in, so of course the way that it's pitched to me as well is very important. I did mention briefly in that article also that the bean chip company that reached out to me, and there's been a lot of instances like this, but reached out to me, and those normally that I get reached out to from offer some sort of product trade, which I know there's a lot of brands in the room, so I totally respect and understand your mindset on that, coming at an idea of having a lot of influencers that are posting on your behalf, maybe micro-influencers, to get the biggest reach for your campaign. It makes a lot of sense. But from our standpoint, because we would also then be the content creators, we are the copywriters, we are the SEO specialists, we are the relationship with our consumers that we've cultivated over years. We're also, I mean, so on and so forth, professional entertainers, you know, and we're using our likeness in the imaging, as well as editors and so on. That really plays into it. And so when you get pitched to do a post in exchange for a bag of chips, for example, it's a little offensive. And so from my standpoint, I always try to see from that perspective and come back by saying, well, look, I feel that there is some sort of partnership we could do here if this is a company I was interested in, or if they pitched me in a way that their campaign actually is something I personally love and am invested in. The content, for example, like a video campaign that would shoot something. They took into account where in the world I am, what products that I use, and what I would be interested in shooting. If they knew, for example, because of my stories, I was on an elephant, retreat, and we were helping, save elephants in Thailand because of the way they're treated or whatnot. That, and they played into that and said, why don't you create a video where you maybe incorporate Epic Bar, Protein Bar, which I did partner with, and showcase, you know, how this, like, sustainability of the fair, like, treatment of elephants or something like that. Then I would be much, much more, you know, incentivized to want to work with them and also meet their criteria as far as budgeting. Because it's not about making a ton of money from doing these partnerships. It's about making it resonate with my following and myself.
Absolutely.
And I was just going to say, if you are going to reach out directly to, like, micro-influencers, it is important. I get a lot of, like, generic emails or DMs or whatever, like, oh, we want you to do this. And you can see it's been copied a gazillion times. But if it's something like, oh, I thought this post you did was blah, 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 or this video is really funny, and you're actually showing that you have a connection, you've already invested time in looking who they are. I mean, it's, you know, sales 101. But I think a lot of people skip over that when they're reaching out to influencers to basically get them on board.
Absolutely. So it's more about the takeaway being be as specific as possible when you're approaching an influencer or someone who you want to represent your digital marketing and really
and tell them how great they are. Yes. I love that.
There you go. If you could hand the microphone back to Greg, I'd like to, because Ryan spoke a little bit, and I'd like to hear more about what it takes to produce actual print or print in the digital world. But if you could speak a little bit about what it really takes, how much time it takes to write the scripts, quality control on the scripts that you produce for the influencers you work with, set days, just what goes into producing just, I mean, even a one-minute video on Instagram.
Yeah, so if you're doing like a one-minute video on Instagram, and I'm speaking more primarily to a short kind of comedy type sketch, whether it's for a brand or it's for an influencer or me personally. Generally, as far as coming up with the concept, there's usually three ways. It's one, you kind of have, in the comedy sense, it's usually set up and then punchline. You know, it's got to end on something funny if it's going to be a comedy video. So you would kind of want to think, well, what is the setup and what's going to be the punchline at the end? And then you can kind of fill out the beats in between of what you how you think it's going to transition to that. The second way is you can just sit down and, you know, try to just write out a script of something original. Maybe you have an idea, maybe you just got in a fight with your girlfriend or something like that, and something really funny was said. You can kind of take that inspiration and then write a script around that. Another idea, I know a lot of people that get inspiration from memes. They'll see a really funny meme, and then they'll flip it into a video. So, I mean, you can see if you're seeing the same meme over and over and the content's been very popular, there might be something there on why it's popular, and then you can kind of spin off of that. So as far as the writing aspect of it, it does vary, but it could take, I mean, you know, over time, you get practice, get better. Take anywhere from, you know, 30 minutes to come up with the concept. Well, not even. 5 minutes to come up with the concept, and then you're off and doing it. It could be trying to write something original. It could be sitting there for half a day and trying to put something on the page. As far as shooting, as far as actually filming it, in the Instagram sense, because the quality is not as high of quality, it kind of down-reses everything. You can get away with a lot on your camera phone. I'm sure everyone here has an iPhone or an Android. The cameras are amazing on them. And you can basically just shoot it on that. Even the sound's really good. If you want to bump up a level, you can hire a crew, or you can shoot a lot of... I now shoot, try to make everything higher quality. We shoot on a Sony A7S camera. And then we have these things called ice lights. They kind of look like lightsabers. It's ICE. and they're about this big, and they're basically just portable lights. And you have two or three of those. You can basically light any situation. You have your camera, you have the lights. I mean, you're pretty much portable to shoot wherever you want. And the shooting can take anywhere, I'd probably say, from an hour. I just did a skit that NBC filmed yesterday. They filmed us doing it. We shot that in an hour. Could take it anywhere from an hour to a couple hours. And as far as editing, that's usually the dreaded process. You can find, all you guys are brands, so can find an editor that's willing to do it on freelance. You can look on Craigslist or Fiverr, or you can try to learn yourself. I edit myself. I do it mostly on Adobe Premiere CC, although I started on iMovie, which is free. It's very easy to use. And that usually takes around 4 hours to maybe edit something, go back and forth, get revisions. If you're going to put out a video, you always want to, show it to people, get feedback, see if they like it before you actually put it out there. It'll give you your video a higher chance of virality.
So the process, it sounds like they're small pieces put together, and now it just, in totality, it sounds like it takes quite a bit of, investment.
It takes a while. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously, if you're producing a brand video like the past presentation that Fiverr showed, I mean, I'm sure they had a whole crew, and I'm sure that was a pre-production in a couple week shoot. Very organized. The influencer, at least the comedy influencer space, it's definitely much more off the cuff. Like, you kind of just come up with stuff and go for it, and you get better at time. But I think anyone, because everyone's very creative here, the more ideas and concepts, I mean, if you even sat to, like, write 20 minutes a day and of just anything, it doesn't have to be a comedy video or stuff about your brand, like, then you're going to get better over time and be able to generate ideas quicker.
Absolutely. And speaking to, on the print side of things, about what is the process like for developing a print ad for, or any sort of content on the digital marketing sphere?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the first thing is getting the communication with the brand. So unless I'm just shooting something for my own content or, like, keeping up a page aesthetic or something like that, it's communication with the brand on what exactly are they interested in. Mm-hmm. Once we've already come to a conclusion on, the trade or financial commitment and whatnot, because I always try to, and I also try to educate people to go above and beyond. When it comes to content creation, when it comes to giving all of the pieces of content, even if they're not used, to the brand or to the advertiser or the PR firm or whoever's setting it up, to give them the best content available, because I think it's a mutual respect situation. And so coming to that standard with them on what exactly are they looking for, and then how can that play into my creative aspect of having that shoot. Mm-hmm. And then it comes down to finding a fun location, tracking hashtags from that location to see what some of the other content made in that area might look like to take inspiration, coordinating and organizing, like, the aesthetic of the page as well, of course, that's really important, and playing that into the timeline that I can expect they can expect the deliverables on actually posting, and how I feel that's going to look, and then negotiating around that. So saying, well, hey, right now I have this black and white kind of desaturated theme going on, and it's very much urban. And so I want to maybe pull away from that because I have a film coming out soon that's going to be more tropical, and I'm going to start pulling into more blues and greens. That probably works really well for this brand that I'm working with, and so we can work in that space. So, for example, for Epic Bar, I was shooting a Western film in New Mexico. And they, if you guys aren't familiar with Epic Bar, it's a natural animal, like, protein bar, and they have bison bars and venison and things like that. So in New Mexico, we had horses on set. And so I was like, what if it was something cool, like the Epic Bar was in the saddle and the cowboy, like, full cowboy gear and everything with a hat and everything. It kind of tells a story of like old time, old Wild West with Epic Bar like showcasing the product as something that is natural and like could easily have been something that someone from the Wild West have eaten, just packaged obviously modernly. And they loved it. And so we ran with it and did a whole photo shoot that day. I mean, we had the drones going and everything next to the horses. We did a huge, like, video. I mean, this is on set for another film. So we actually had the film say, yes, that sounds good. Like, go ahead and shoot what you guys want to do. Just don't showcase anything about the character, of course. And so there were some little things I had to consider and think about. But it ended up being a really good partnership with them. That I hope to keep working with. But as far as that, I mean, that was a whole day of getting the horses and finding a good spot that might look nice and like getting in the full costume or wardrobe of the character that I was playing, you know, positioning and doing the whole product shoot as well, because I also not only take pictures usually of me in the shot with the, that I will post, but also product shots for the brand as well, because if they're up and coming or they're a startup or whatever it is, they need those shots, especially if it's done creatively and well shot. Then, of course, using our DSLRs and getting multiple different angles on it, getting the lighting right, and editing, of course. So I use Lightroom, Photoshop Mix, Facetune 2, a lot, all mobile for the most part, so I can get it done on the fly. But, yeah, it's about making it as fast and as easy as possible, because that keeps the cost down for you guys as well. Because if we're taking literally 8 hours to shoot something, there's no way that my 8 hours is going to be the same worth as me being able to shoot with a Wi-Fi compatible camera, having it sent right to my phone with no Wi-Fi in the area. I can do all my editing ready to go right when I hit the hotel, it's posted. It takes me a couple hours. So it keeps all the costs down for everyone and the content remains consistent quality. So I think that's the key in like educating for those of you that work with talent or content creators for brands, educating them on making it expedited. But still maintaining the same quality. That's a huge part about it is well, if you guys are taking this seriously as content creators, consider investing into a DSLR camera that has Wi-Fi capability. Consider investing into these applications that are free, but invest time into learning how to shoot, learning how to edit, learning how to create video and use Final Cut and use all these different aspects because that's going to make it faster and easier for them, which means that their costs will go down but still feel fair priced. And everyone wins because everyone gets a bigger return. So that's what I would recommend on that. But photo shoot wise, yeah, I try to keep it as quick and easy as possible. And another thing is wardrobe, which many people don't consider. But every shot, I mean, for the most part, at least for my page, I don't want to be wearing the same outfits in every single thing that's going out. I like to create like a unique piece of content for each brand or for myself. And so now I'm in Nordstrom looking at clothes, and I'm also considering wardrobe, and I'm thinking about on-set wardrobe and things like that. And that really plays into the time and energy also. So just keeping it as fast as possible.
Okay.
Speaking of quality and budget, you can get away with a lot. It doesn't have to be, like, perfect quality, like Spielberg shot it or something. And a lot of the social videos, it's really more about the story and what's coming across. If you don't, obviously, if you're a bigger brand, you want to control it. But if you're working with influencers, it's really more about the story and the message. And you can get away with a lot without perfection. You don't have to have perfect lighting. You don't have to have perfect sound. As long as the story is coming across, people are okay with that.
Absolutely. So in terms of... Right now, it seems that it varies from case to case, and depending on the influencer, their brand, what their specialty is in content creation, whether it's video or print, and why, this is kind of an open question to all of you, why do you think that it's important to set this industry standard for between how brands approach influencers, how influencers go about setting their rates, because I know that that's a huge topic at the moment for SAG-AFTRA in recapturing commercials and in that digital marketplace. So my question really is, how does it benefit the creator, the audience, and the business that is approaching the influencer?
I was going to say, I think it more just streamlines everything. There's a big joke in like the influencer world, like the first five brand deals you're going to get screwed on. I've been screwed on brand deals, but it's a business. I get it. The brands want to get the cheapest price, and we want to get paid the most. So you have to obviously meet somewhere in the middle. I think by definitely streamlining it, that'd be great. It's a very big hurdle to overcome because there's so many different variables, but it would definitely offer protection for both sides. Speaking of that, like a brand that like doesn't pay me, I'm just going to delete off my page. And even though, you know, contractually it says you got to keep it on your page for, let's just say, 6 months or a year. But if they don't pay me, they're out of contract, and there's no way to really enforce that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're also seeing a shift where you're trying to create a relationship with the influencer and not just do these one-offs, right? Because you're really trying to resonate with their community, their following. And, you know, if you really want to build this partnership with their following, you need to treat the creator with respect. And I think that's what it comes down to. And, you know, it would be great if there was a set industry standard, but because of the evolution of this market rapidly growing, I mean, we're still figuring that out together, right? But as long as everyone approaches it with respect and the long-term potential of what this could be, I think we'll be okay, right? But I think that's really important. Just like, okay, they have a lot of power to screw brands over too, just in a way that a traditional actor doesn't, right? Because they have a following that they can then turn against you at a whim. So you have to keep that in mind when you're working with them. Like, they actually have a lot of control over the narrative. And so that should take some kind of precedence when you're working with them.
I think, absolutely. And all influencers that I've spoken with, worked with, talked to, some of Greg's friends and Greg as well, like, many influencers want to take this more seriously, what they're creating, and you know, they recognize the shelf life of an influencer. You know, once you're no longer hot anymore, the brand stopped calling, or the agent that's repping you for these deals stops calling. So instead, I think the way to make it more serious for them is to do something like join SAG-AFTRA, to get involved in being a professional creator of content or being a professional actor while also having an influence. And at the same time, actors who have done tons of films or projects are now recognizing, well, those residuals that they used to get from commercials that were maybe $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in residuals, they're now now they're buyouts in the new media space, which means that if the buyout doesn't hit $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000, or if they're doing print, for example, and it takes them as much time to create that content as it would to be on set for a commercial that they made $50,000 or whatever it is, now that shift is happening so much, the professional actors also want to be in the digital space. So everyone meeting in the middle, I think, just to back that up. Including the brands, including the representation of the brands. I mean, everyone coming to a center point where we all feel comfortable, hopefully under SAG-AFTRA, of course, would be fantastic. But even for print and things out of the jurisdiction of it, making sure that, you know, like everyone's been saying, it's that it's fair, and that those influencers are actually seen as people that could go on. Like, for example, the first brands that I started working with, I was at, I think, 9 or 10,000 followers, and I let them know what my growth was and what was happening at the time, and this is a ways ago, but now those same brands, if I felt I was treated fairly and I felt everything was really fantastic, not only will I bring up Epic Bar at something like this, for example, but I will keep them on my page for years. I will continue to push that and tell my friends about this amazing partnership that we did. You know, and if I'm working with someone who just hit 500,000, for example, in 2 months because she started collaborating with some huge influencers, I will say, well, look at Epic Bar because they treat their people right. And that's just the way it goes. Now, if Epic Bar said, I'll send you a protein bar if you guys do a whole shoot on set, I would be saying the opposite right now. So it really is, it's more social now, and it's become, I mean, social media obviously is social, but it's more so like everyone starts to work together and know each other, especially in Los Angeles and New York, and those influencers in Kentucky that you think, oh, well, they don't really understand, they're 18, I'm not saying you guys are doing this, but in general, you know, they're 18, they have a million followers, they don't really get it, well, eventually they're going to want to be actors. Eventually they're going to have a really big voice, and eventually they're going to join SAG-AFTRA, most likely,
And then you don't want to be the brand that tried to give them a bag of chips when they were in Kentucky and didn't know better. That's kind of where it stands. Yeah.
And I was also going to say, I know there is a lot of influencers out there that if you can contact them early on, they might not have had any brand deals. And you could basically build a partnership with them, or maybe they've had a couple brand deals. But you could put them on a salary, and I know that this has happened to some people I know. No one worked with them, and a company found them, and now they're blowing up because they're growing their social following, but they're still on the salary. And I mean, for brands, it's kind of like, you know, you have them in a contract for a year, so you kind of have them locked in, and they're growing their social, and you're getting basically more reach for your original price that you negotiated. It's a risk. It's the same as, you know, testing ads and seeing what works and what doesn't. But if you sign some content creators, influencers, and you want to take basically a risk on them, and you say, okay, this is going to be a person that's going to blow up, that's going to do better, that resonates with their brand, then it might be worth putting them on, you know, a couple months' salary. It doesn't have to be anything major. Just depend on what level they're at. And then you're really developing, you know, they're really developing that brand story with the audience, and I'm sure they'll much more like bend over backwards for anything that you're asking them to do because you've built that partnership and you're actually paying them on a monthly basis.
Absolutely. So it sounds, in essence, it sounds like the payout for treating the content creators as artistic directors and just with respect and just climbing to a level of reaching that industry standard really has huge payouts for everyone involved.
And it might not even be pay. You know, if there's a situation where the budget is the budget, and that's what it is. Like, at least from my standpoint, the people that I talk to, we understand. Like, it's not about the money so much. It's more about just the respect in which the communication is opened, and the way in which it's handled. And, you know, because it's not just about someone's reach. It's not just about the insights or their KPI for the brand. It's about how is this a collaboration between the two, and is this something that we could work together to make a really amazing product, something that you obviously have created the product, but we would love to help get it out there because it's something we believe in too.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, also you could get exclusivity. If you're a clothing brand, you can say, okay, can't do anything else with clothing brands. So you can lock them down with that too. Especially if you put them, you know, have them on a monthly or X amount of videos that you want them to do.
Right. So in general, just reaching that standard, it helps everyone in the process of just being able to improve your brand standing overall and actually grow your brand standing and develop a good reputation and really perpetuate that throughout all social media platforms. Just for the sake of time, I wanted to check. I have no idea how long we've been speaking. So, Brianna, do you have? We have about 10 minutes. Okay, so I wanted to open up the panel to questions. If any of you have questions, I know we went through a lot of information, but if anyone has questions, we can just start.
Hi, thanks, team. Just a quick question around the brands, when they utilize your services, do they have some sort of KPI or measurement to work at how successful you've been for their brand? Like, is it the reach? Is it how many people you've influenced? You know, how do the brands measure the success of hiring you guys?
That's a great question.
From my standpoint, I'll let Greg speak to him. I mean, traditionally, it's reach. That's, I feel like everyone is asking for reach. We were actually just having this conversation. I don't think it's reach. I don't think that's the best KPI here. I think it's engagement. And it's all of the factors that play into engagement. It's not just how much likes and comments. It's how long are they looking at the content, even if it's print or if it's a still. You know, what are the comments? And I know the algorithm shifts all the time with growth and whatnot, but, you know, multiple word comments that are actually relevant and pertinent to the content. Possible tracking, you know, clicks, bit.ly links and tracking, things like that I've done in the past, which I'm open to. I'm not a huge fan of the 20% off discount codes and things like that because it's so in your face that it's marketing to your following. I think it's expendable eventually. Your following eventually will start to smell that you're selling so much that you're no longer
just someone that they are interested in as a person. It's more like we interrupt this programming for another advertisement and another and another one. And eventually they're like, that's enough. So it's really being careful about, I mean, for us, being careful about it, but then making sure when we do a partnership that all of those KPIs are not only well spoken out and also have an open line of communication about, like, why I feel engagement is important or more important than reach, but also giving what they ask for, because in many cases it is.
It's for me, it's not really reach. I mean, reach is all over the place. It fluctuates all the time. But it's more the style of what you're doing and how it fits the brand. I actually got reached out by this one brand. They didn't even want the video on my page. They wanted it for their website. They said, we like your look. We like what you're doing. Can you put together and produce a video that would come across with this brand message? And they actually sent me a script, and they're like, can you do this? And I was like, it's going to be costly I think it's more than that these days, because I don't know how many of you guys have worked with influencers, but if it's not directly in direct partnership with what the influencer's audience is into and what the influencer believes in, you might not get high conversions. So it's definitely more than that. I think it's a lot of brand awareness and what are you bringing to the table for the brand.
One more thing I want to make sure I add is when you have a post up and it's in perpetuity, for example, you know, there's no in the contract, it's keep it up on your page forever. That's a product conflict for creators as well. And so they might not realize it, but if you did, I'm just going to use Coca-Cola again. Let's say I did a still for Coca-Cola for a campaign they were doing. Well, I'm no longer going to be able to work with Pepsi and so on and so on and so on. And many don't realize that when it comes to casting, even in the traditional sense, those that are still going out for commercials, for example, we don't know why we might not get the job. Usually we never hear. And a lot of times it's because there's some kind of conflict out there. They were able to see another commercial where you represented Pepsi, and oh, no, thank you, we're not interested. But they don't say why. And so that could really negatively affect someone's career longevity. So also having something about no perpetuity in contracts, like influencers are getting more educated, 100%, and I'm making sure of it. So that is going to be a big part now moving forward, that if someone notices perpetuity, I tell them to call it out. Because that's something that shouldn't ever be in the industry, because that could really hurt that person 10 years from now when there's a whole new platform and it's VR and AR or whatever is going on. That could still be a product conflict out there. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you. This is such a great panel. My name's Caitlin. I work at a company called Infoblox, which is cybersecurity. I'm really excited to hear you guys speak because I have an acting background as well, but I've kind of been out of it for a while. But I hear the word respect a lot, and as a fellow actress, I hear you on that, but I'd love to know more without, like, getting too sensitive. Like, if I'm pushing the limit here, sorry, but, like, I don't know if you have an example of what that looks like. Like, for me, as someone who's reaching out to influencers, trying to, you know, create content, like, what can I do to... Where's the disrespect? Like, what can I do to make sure that my company isn't one of those people, one of those groups?
That's a fantastic question. Ryan, would you
like
to take
that?
Sure,
I'd love to. Thank you for that question, because that's where I think where it all starts, is how is that communication best made? I think it comes down to the collaborative mindset. It's the shift from us, or not us, just any influencer, being a means to an end to actually being a collaborative part of your team. So coming in from the standpoint of what would you like to create for this campaign? Well, if it doesn't quite work for your campaign, you can come back and say, well, not quite what we were going for. I was thinking more in this realm. And I love it when people come with ideas. That's a huge thing. Even as a photographer, if someone comes to the table with an idea for something really creative and interesting, instead of just, here's the brand, here's the hashtags, here's the FDA or FTC compliant, you know, hashtags you have to put, run with it. That's not as fun, because then I have to create something from nothing. Whereas if I have a guideline that's like, we want to do this like Assassin's Creed-esque, really amazing travel video in Italy where you're going to jump off a building and then you're going to like hold out a you know, whatever, the product, the selfie stick that I'm doing or whatever it is, and, you know, and make it organic and make it fun, well, I will have a lot of fun making that. And that, it just seems more interesting to me. So I think coming at it from that standpoint, and then also valuing of influencers, like knowing that, all now knowing all of the things that go into it and how much work, and like how these are people who used to make $60,000 for a commercial like that, that they're coming to the table, and maybe you can only offer $250. Even if they have 1 million followers, I've worked with influencers that are my friends that have done brand partnerships for $100 or nothing in some cases, not even product trade, because they believe in the relationship with that brand and they really believe in what the brand stands for. If there's a nonprofit aspect of what you're working on, definitely bring that up, because that's a huge part of a lot of what we do for content creation, because we're all artists. That's the thing. Like, some of us understand our marketing and understand how to work in this world, but mostly artists, and artists want to just have their art seen and want to get a good message out there and tell a story. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna, okay. Yeah.
So I helped produce a brand deal in the almost high five-figure range, and the back and forth with the client was just crazy. Like, the editing, it was supposed to be posted like New Year's Day, and we like just finished the final deliverable, because they wanted so much back and forth with, like, in edit, like literally changing, like, lower the volume 2 decibels on this 1 second. Like, it was like absolutely like crazy, and it went back and forth for a month straight on in the edit that we had on January 1st was pretty similar to the final product, minus like some very small tweaks, but they just kept going back and forth. And contractually we didn't agree upon how many revisions were allowed, in a sense. So it frustrated us on our end, and then we want to please the client, so we didn't charge them extra, although we told them if we do anything in the future, it's going to happen. But it's good to agree upon the terms in advance, especially if you're doing video with an influencer, just to know how many revisions there are and what basically the back and forth is going to be. I have another example of an influencer friend that I know that did a major brand deal, and they okayed the script, he shot it, he did it. I thought it was incredibly funny. And then they told them that if he posts it, he has to have the, it was like, this is an ad, like in huge letters across the entire video, like, which for his page, he's like, no, it's gonna kill my audience. Like, I'm talking, it's like, beyond the FTC guidelines even mean. So he just like, I can't work with this brand anymore. He actually tried to give them back the money. He's like, I don't even want the money. He's like, I just don't want to even post the video, but he contractually had to do it. But now he's not working with that brand anymore.
Love this question. So I want to just really emphasize what Ryan said about in perpetuity, because folks are working on building a career in this entertainment field. It is a killer. I talk to casting directors every day, and they vet people, and conflicts are a serious thing. So, like, that could really hurt their ability to make a living. And just keeping that in mind, I think, is really considerate and thoughtful, and not putting their livelihood at risk, right? For something that's going to go so far down their feed that it's not going to be as much of a value to you anymore anyways. So that, and then also, you know, if you're working with a SAG-AFTRA member, not asking them to work off the card, right? So now that we have the low budget digital waiver, I mean, rates are completely negotiable if it's produced under $50,000, and most of these projects are, because when you ask them to work off the card, you're putting their careers and their membership at risk, right? Because they can be expelled from the union. They could be blacklisted from the union, and that's a lot, and that's a lot to put on them, right? But they also are maybe really passionate about your brand, really passionate about this collaboration. And so just keeping that in mind, right, like where they are, where you are, and now that we have a way to help facilitate this partnership, we're really happy about that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Shane.
Real quick last thing. Sorry. I love that question a lot. One time I got reached out to by a bracelet company that I'm still thinking about to this day, and I actually now I'm considering I'm going to go write them again. They reached out to me with the most creative idea. They said, I'm sure they use a lot of influencers, but they were like, we have this new bracelet that we created. We have a small budget. If you want, could you create a bracelet for us with the colors that inspire you on your page? Could you come up with like a concept for maybe like the center part of the bracelet, like maybe with your star sign or something like that, or something that means a lot to you? You can put a quote on the inside of it. And I just got so excited by that concept. I was like, I'll do it for one of those bracelets. Like, absolutely. And I mean, it ended up just slowing down and I just didn't follow up, whatever, so I'm going to. But I would have done the entire thing and probably still will, including all of the creation and the blueprints and the write-ups, and I mean going really all out just on the concept that I get to be a collaborative part of creating something that I don't care if I see a dollar from. I hope they profit from it if it's something that means something to me. But that's just a good example to go back to that I've got to put a big part of my creativity into it, which made it fun.
And also, as far as the initial outreach to influencers, if you're not going to offer something substantial, I don't know if that's the right word, but if you're not going to offer something good, don't say it in the initial email. Like someone wrote me, hey man, like we really like your video, I'd like to do it for my brand, I'm going to give you a free pair of underwear in exchange. And I was just like, I'm not even going to write back to this. Like, if he would have said like, hey, well, we don't have a lot of money, what's your rate, like let's work something out. You know, open up the dialogue before offering it, like on the table, because it's just, for that I'm just like shaking my head. I'm like, I don't know, there better be great underwear for that.
And the same influence they have positively, they have the same influence negatively, just a heads up. Some influencers are crazy and will post horrible things about, I mean, it's injurious, of course, and you could do a whole lawsuit, but if you offend them enough with something like that, they'll be like, this freaking company asked me to post about underwear, and it could really hurt you for the extra 5 minutes it takes to write a nice email. That's it.
Well, that was a lot of information. You can keep that microphone. I have my own right here. Does anyone, we may be out of time, I don't know, but does anyone else have a question that they'd like to ask? Okay. I think that we covered a lot of ground.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you all so much for being here today. Thank you.